All right, welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
You're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. And our artist this week, this is time number four, Kelly Lee Teske. Kelly, welcome.
Hello. Hey, okay. say artist again, because the other times it was all about glasses.
Oh, artist. Our artist this week is Kelly Lee Teske.
That yeah, way thank we want? You.
Okay.
Yeah, all thanks. Right.
Yeah.
This, if you want to learn about eyeglasses and vision, there are three other shows. I'll put them in the show notes. You can go listen to Kelly all day long about eyeglasses, but we're not talking about eyeglasses this time. Nope.
No.
No.
Talking about stitching.
Going to talk about what we're supposed to talk about. Yeah.
But that was good. They were good.
Yeah. My favorite thing to talk about. No, those were fun. But every single time, Gary, I said, okay, next time, can we talk about stitching? Next time, can we talk about stitching? So are you doing this just to shut me up so I don't bug you anymore?
No, it's because we want to talk about stitching.
Talk about stitching.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it shuts you up, then we'll take that as a bonus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Got it.
But no, it's it's just because we're just generally interested. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I got to hear, all right, you've got such a list of techniques and things that you do, but one of them is slow stitching. I still don't get the slow stitching. It's been explained to me three different ways. How do you view slow stitching?
Okay. Can I tell you that I don't get it either, even though I do it?
Okay, our expert guest this week is Kelly Lee Teske, and the first topic is
slow stitching. Well, you started with my least favorite, and I'm not going to say it's my least favorite, but remember the whole heart slow stitch that Jennifer was working on with that? She was following, I think it's K3N, she did that project. I was following the Catherine, the same girl, and was doing the same thing Jennifer was doing, but I did. She was working on this journal for all year. And so slow stitching, I'm not going to say that I don't get it. I do. But it's not, I started it and it was helpful because, and you guys, I will bring this up a lot because this is so much in my story lately in my stitching life is, grieving my son, Sam, and trying to get through and figure out finding the joy again in stitching and what I'm making. So I use that slow stitching kind of as a meditative process to lead myself back into wanting to stitch again and make this quilt that I started for Sam. And, so I think that's the thing about it is that, there's no plan. You just do it. It is exactly what it says, meditative stitching. It doesn't matter if something doesn't match or, I mean, and some people do, but you know, it's raw edges and things not being perfect and, you know, and just kind of getting through and then making something that you think is beautiful that is, you know, different colored stitches and raw edges and things that are frayed. And that's how I view it anyway.
Okay. Well, that fits with what everyone else has said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
right,
so take us through that process though. You know, the grieving part, I'm sure is an integral aspect, but that process to motivate you to stitch and using slow stitching to do that. What goes on in your mind as you pick up needle and thread and just a piece of cloth and start stitching on it? Is it just to get you away from the daily grind, or what is the process that goes in on?
Yeah. Well, can I lump it all together, Gary? Because that's a good question. And I think it answers to why I do so many different things is because, so if I feel like slow stitching, it's because I don't want to look at a pattern. I don't want to follow any instructions. I don't want to have anything planned. I feel like if I'm watching TV, I just want to keep my hands busy and keep it connected to my heart and my head. And I don't really care what comes out of it. That's more the process, you know? But then like when I cross stitch, for me, that's more of a technical thing because I have to really focus and look at the chart and make sure I've got the light and the glasses and, you know, the right everything. So for slow stitching, I could probably do that without any glasses on because I'm It's just more for me, like by feel, like moving the needle through the fabric.
Okay.
And does that make sense?
Does it differ from quilting though? Because quilting, I mean, people hand quilt, but mm-hmm. that's not the same thing, right?
No, it's not. Although, you know, in slow stitch, you can have layered, you know, things like you would in a quilt, the back, the batting, and the top. You know, that's just a different feel of the fabric. But even hand quilting, it's a little bit more, even if you're doing big stitches, you know, you have to concentrate on what you're doing there. You're either trying to make a straight line or you're following a pattern that you drew or, you know, there's some kind of semblance to that. It isn't just free form, you know, willy-nilly, you don't care what it looks like.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So then can we say that slow stitching is the equivalent of how we perceive knitters who just sit there and talk and watch TV and the hands are doing something and they're mm-hmm. not, it's the same kind of thing then.
Yeah, I would think unless they're making a sweater or something and they have yeah. to make sure they're getting the, you know, the yeah. length of the arms right. But if they're making a blanket, and I don't knit, I have tried to crochet, but those are the only two things I really don't do. So I can't really speak to that, but I would imagine that's the same yeah. feeling, you know, yeah. that it's yeah. more mindless, like you just automatically do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm not saying knitting is mindless because they obviously are counting and paying attention, but you know, good knitters, people who've done it a long time can just sit for hours.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that string's just coming out of that ball. And it's like they right. aren't even engaged with what they're knitting. And they're talking to people, and it's just, it blows my mind how you can do
right.
that.
Well, even people that crochet, I have a girl that I work with, and she crochets, and I took a crochet class because I really want to crochet an edge to put on my quilt, a certain quilt that I made. So I thought, okay, that's got to be easy. My straight chain stitch was so like a snake and so uneven. I had to give up on it. And she'll sit there and her lunch, you know, watching something or whatever. And she does, she's making blankets and all this stuff, but, and she's just crocheting away, not paying yeah. any attention, you know, looking around the room. And right. yeah, so it's a different thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's amazing to me. It's like when Jennifer spins or spins thread, and she's just, it's like, it's over here. And it's going on, and she's just creating out of all this mess.
Yeah,
beautiful thread, and talking to everybody like it's nothing. And yeah, same kind right. of thing. Yeah,
yeah, right. exactly, right. exactly.
Can't relate.
And you know, it depends on, and you know, maybe you guys. Well, Beth, you do more than just cross stitch, so maybe you can answer to this. But that's what I I'm glad I do so many different things. But then I sometimes frustrate myself because I think if I would just focus on one thing and work on one thing, I could get it done. Because I'm not just, you know, they say, are you a process or product? I'm both. I love the process, but I also want to see it finished. You know, I'm right. not doing it just to, so I think if I could just focus on something and get it done, but some days I feel like making yo-yos, some days I feel like cross stitching, and I just kind of go with the flow. I used to put a time on myself, like, cause I did a lot of things for gifts and I got to get that quilt done. I got to get that wall hanging done. And I don't do that anymore. I decided a couple years ago, I'm just going to stitch for myself. Now I did slip a couple things in there. I was going to ask you guys this. What do you think? So my Jim, his niece had a baby a couple years ago. And I was kind of missing making something for someone. So I made a cross stitch sampler with her date, you know, her birthday and all that. Well, now she's had another baby a couple of weeks ago. Do you think I feel, not that I don't love her, but do you feel like I don't feel like making another sampler for another baby? But that's where you get stuck is when
right.
it's like, I have too many things I want to make for myself. So now do you say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to make you a sampler? Or do you just ignore it and let them figure out and wonder?
Well,
if she's going to get a sampler for the new baby, you know.
See, and I'm in that same spot because I made stockings for our two grandsons.
Mm-hmm.
And then our son has a daughter who will be 2 in January. And in January, they're going to have a second daughter.
Oh, geez.
Have I made stockings for either? No. And our daughter-in-law, Kevin's wife, I've not made a stocking for her. And I've not made a stocking for our son-in-law, Sarah's husband. And so there's 4 stockings. But it's that I should make.
Right.
Okay. But I'm with you 100%. The minute you start one of those, the pressure's on.
Right.
And I hate that. It sucks the life out of it. Yeah.
Right. I don't want that pressure anymore. Just like when you did Sarah Parr. I mean, when you first started talking about Gary, you really wanted to get it done for Sarah's birthday that October, I think.
Yeah.
But it took you, did you just finish it? I mean, did it take you a year or more?
Yeah.
So did you feel pressure on yourself that whole time to get it done? Or were you just, at some point, did you go, so that was something you were making for your daughter. So obviously your heart was in that too, but I'm sure there are times that you just didn't feel like working on it.
Right.
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 You know?
Right.
Yeah. And that's the fundamental problem because it gets into that whole doing needlework and giving it as a gift. I'll never do it again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Because again, it's that pressure. And then at the other end, there's rarely an appreciation for what you've done.
Yep.
So
yep.
No. Not doing it.
Are you agreeing with that, Beth? Or are you?
Well, I agree. But I have to laugh because I made the mistake of telling my mom that I was going to make her a cover and I was going to cross stitch it. I showed her the pattern. I showed it to her. She goes, oh yes, that'd be lovely. Well, now every time I talk to her, she's like, well, where's my Missalette cover? And I'm like, I haven't touched it.
Yeah.
And she's getting older. So I'm going to make it for her, I really should, but she's a stink pot. If you tell her she wants it and she wants it now.
Yeah,
She's bad. So
I just had this happen because I did the lectures at the Great Wisconsin Quilt Show on September 5th and 7th. I was there on the 5th. My older sister Debbie helped me. And then on Saturday, my younger sister Tracy helped me. I have not made either one of those a quilt. And there's a reason why I wasn't going to make my older sister Deb a quilt, but it goes into my whole yo-yo thing because she has my grandma's yo-yo quilt and she won't let me have it. So I have bad feelings about it. So I thought, I'm not making her a quilt. She's got Graham's yo-yo quilt. But anyway, I heard my sister telling someone, Gary, it's
now,
true. Hey,
now the sisters are fighting over a quilt. Okay.
Yeah, my whole yo-yo lecture is on that. But listen, I had to alter my yo-yo lecture because I didn't know my niece, who's my older sister's daughter, and my sister were coming to that one. I just thought it was going to be my younger sister and my mom. Well, and then my mom said, you have to be nice. You can't tell like the whole story. So anyway, to back up, my older sister, Deb, I heard her telling someone afterwards when we were cleaning up, just a random person, she's never made me a quilt. Well, then on the next lecture, my sister Tracy just bought a farm and she wants animals and she wants alpaca. Well, one of the quilts I made was I embroidered a whole, the whole medallion center was an alpaca head that I did. And so, my sister says in front of the whole audience, I should have this quilt. This should be my quilt. So I said, oh, okay, you can have this quilt. Well, then everybody heard, like the whole audience heard. So I had to give my sister the quilt and I gave it to her, like thanking her for helping me. Well, then I had to give my other sister a quilt. So I gave her my very favorite one that had, it was 3 like nesting doll angels. That was me and my 2 sisters. And I do have a brother, not to leave him out. But so I ended up giving her that quilt and acting like I was planning on it the whole time, telling her, thank you for helping me. Well, that's a whole nother story. We don't even have to go there.
That is funny.
I'm out two quilts that I use for my lectures.
Oh, they were part of your presentation too. So,
yes.
Oh
yes.
Man.
Oh no.
So anyway, yeah, and quilts take a long time. That's why if you want to jump to this, do you want me to tell you already? My new love is rug cooking.
Yes. Oh yeah,
rug cooking. And yeah, and you know what? And Gary, you act like you don't know what rug cooking is.
No, I know what it is.
Okay.
No, I know exactly what it is. It just always entertains me in my own mind when people talk about rug hooking, because all I go to is that back in the 70s, what was that? The latch hook.
Yeah. This is different.
Which was just such a hokey thing to me. And when people say rug hooking, that's all that comes up in my head is just that. Those little short pieces of yarn, and you just punch them in. And
well, and this is different than latch hooking, because latch hooking has the like the fringy stuff, doesn't it, Beth? Latch hooking. So, okay, now Beth, you showed on your Wednesday night show when you were talking about that canvas piece. Was that a laurel birch? I missed part of it. Okay, that are you a real technical stitcher then, Beth, and not? See, I think I'm a more emotional stitcher. Are you more technical? Because you really get into the details of it.
I do. I like having things look a certain way. Yeah. But they don't have to be perfect. I'm not a perfectionist, that's for sure. If I get to a certain point and I'm like, I'm done.
Let's psychoanalyze Beth. This is going to be
fun. Let's. Well, you know why?
Because wait, I got to go get some popcorn. Just a minute.
Okay. Well, wait, this is why I brought it up, talking about rug cooking, because I've always been interested in it, but it scared me because I'm self-diagnosed as having some kind of ADD. It's really hard for me to focus, but if I have just one thing in front of me, but if somebody starts adding things to what I'm thinking about or working on, then my brain feels like it's in a blender. So when you talk about rug cooking, for me to think about those wool strips and pulling them up and having them line up perfectly. Do you know what I'm talking about, Beth?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that, and Gary, I'm not leaving you out.
It's okay, I'm getting used to it.
That always kind of, not scared me, but I was like, that's not what I want. That seems like a lot of pressure to pull those loops up and have them even and blah, blah, blah. Well, then I found two girls, Deanne Fitzpatrick in Canada, and then this Deanna David, who's ribbon candy rug hooking here in the United States. And again, this goes back to my grieving with Sam after I tried the slow stitch. I just could not start Sam's quilt yet because here's the thing with quilting and even cross stitch. If you make mistakes, you have to tear it out. Mm-hmm. And then you have the chance of cutting your fabric or shredding your linen or whatever. And it's just, you know, you kind of have to be in the mode for that. But when I wasn't even rug hooking yet. And this Deanne Fitzpatrick on her YouTube, I don't know why it came up for me, but she uses yarn and she just pulls those loops up. She doesn't care. I know, right, Beth? She pulls them up. She doesn't care if they're even. She doesn't cut her, if she does use wool strips, she doesn't cut them evenly. She just grabs it and cuts it with scissors. She uses anything. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to try that. And so I started rug cooking her style. And, you know, when you make a mistake, you just pull that yarn out. And it's almost, this is how I equated it to the grieving is, if I make a mistake, I'm just pulling that yarn out. No damage done. I just start over and put it back in. And that's why I like it. And I'm not following a pattern. I mean, having a light on is good and my glasses, but it isn't like you have to be so focused in on, you know, that I can't see him. My light's not right. And so it's just a little bit more freedom for me right now, you know, a little bit more easy. And even if you follow the pattern, it doesn't matter. Nobody knows what it's supposed to look like. I mean, so much of it is so primitive and folky anyway. Now there are some that are really detailed and I don't even care to go there.
All right. Now I got to back you up. Yeah. So do you buy it where it's already drawn on, or are you drawing your own onto the the both. Ground? I don't even know. Okay.
Both. Both. So I got a couple patterns, and you can buy it and download just the pattern and then transfer it to either use burlap, linen, rug warp, months cloth. I mean, there's different things that they've used. You can transfer it onto your material. You can buy it already drawn on the burlap or whatever, and that's more expensive. Or you just take a marker and you just free will and draw right on your linen, you know, linen or burlap. And then if there's a mistake, you just hook over it, you know? So like if I was drawing a pattern in black and I didn't like something and I wanted to correct it or change it, then I would use a different color Sharpie, like a red one, and draw it in the way where I really actually want to hook. Or just random, just do it, you know, free.
All right. So are you, you're not using these on the floor, are you? Another question.
Mine so far, I haven't done a floor one. If you do floor, this is what I've learned. If you do a floor, you really want to make sure that you use linen so that it doesn't degrade, you know, like where burlap will, you know, degrade and get wet and moisture. And then you also want to use wool. So some of the wall hangings I've done are some, you know, because that can get expensive too. So I'm getting a lot of yarn from Goodwill or going to Joann Fabrics, and some of it's acrylic or a blend. But if you're going to do something for the floor, you want all wool, you know, so it wears. So I do want to do a wool, kind of a little entrance rug to my sewing room here, but I haven't gotten there yet. I want to practice a little bit more.
See, my cat would think that that's his bed if I did something like that. Oh, was on the floor. Wow. And immediately I would get cat on it. That would be, and I was like, no.
But there's so many different things that you can do with them, you know, frame them, hang, put them on the wall. The first little one that I did, I put in a shadow box and I put it behind glass. And I didn't know if I should. I didn't know if the glass would, you know, if that wool would sweat behind there. But I think because it's not right against the rug, it's okay for right now. So,
Okay, I'm not going to try it. This does not. It fascinates me because it's an interesting technique, but it's not one that
Well, you just okay, Gary, you want to talk about painted canvas? Because that was the other thing.
Go ahead.
You want to talk about something?
Fine with me.
Okay, so because you guys were talking about painted canvas the other night, and I've heard you say this before. See, I like everything. That's my problem. I can't focus on one thing, right?
I have the same issue. I have the same issue all the time.
We just have to start some kind of club where it's okay. It's okay. So I
thought we already did. That's us. Yeah. We're the Fiber Talk Club.
Right. Yeah, we pretty much established the club. Yes.
We're the club.
At one time, Gary didn't really want to talk about quilting, though. That was going into a different area. But are you opening up a little bit to quilts, Gary?
Well, we've
there's
done
so
some
much
quilting.
Handwork. Yeah.
We've done some quilting shows, and it's because, to me, quilting, you know, my exposure to quilting has always been these people who are just so hyper-focused on the points matching up and all, you know, all the things. Like, get over yourselves. You know, it's a quilt. But then when you start to see what people do with quilts and then the embellishing they do, see, to me, that falls into the needle arts world, the needle arts world, as opposed to the sewing machine, make your points match up. Because I struggle with that whole thing because it gets into that quilt police world.
And exactly.
It sucks the creativity and the fun out of it. You know, follow the pattern. Your points don't match up. Tear it out and do it again. No. You should have – and I think the quilt people that we've had have been much more on the creative, more free-form side of the game, and it's because of that.
And that's why I kind of wanted to open that up too, because almost all the work that I do is handwork. I mean, I do have my sewing machine, but I don't love it like I do my hands. I mean, yeah. Sitting and working with my hands. And to me, that crosses over to any of these things that we've talked about. Cross stitch, you know, the rug hooking, quilting, because for me, it's all done with a needle and thread. And mm-hmm. well, Gary, you'll find this interesting. You know what? And we will, I do want to talk about painted canvas. But when I heard Deanne Fitzpatrick talk about rug hooking, and she called it a stitch, she didn't mm-hmm. say, I mean, she actually called it a stitch. And I thought, oh, yeah, that resonated with me. I was like, maybe I could do this. Yeah. So, yeah. But it's any handwork to me. I think anybody that likes to work with some kind of needle, yarn, wool, thread, and put it to some kind of fabric, you know, meet those two mediums together to me is, you know,
right.
We all have the same heart and the same feel. I mean, you can get it. You get it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Cause right. to me, rug hooking is not that far away from tambour embroidery, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. to me pretty much the same movement, but there's a huge creative aspect to it and an art and a talent that comes into play. And I mean, I just think it really becomes, is there a needle and a thread that go together and then create something?
Right.
Because you know, we've never had a machine. I don't think we've had a machine embroidery person, maybe one, but that's a whole.
And see, that doesn't. Yeah. That, see, when you're talking about the quilts matching up in the quilt police, or even when you talk about machine embroidery, I mean, those are, to me, it's just not the same thing. Mm. You know, it's the machine doing the work. I mean, you have to have some kind of talent and creativity in running that machine, but that isn't what resonates with me. I've got to have my hands directly in it. You know.
But if you watch machine embroiderers, there's an art to that. A huge.
Well, no, yeah, thing. I'm not gonna discount that at all. I'm just saying, yeah. Yeah, right. I'm not gonna discount that. They are absolutely. But see, that runs to the technology part where I don't want to learn that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, right.
You know, we figured that out, trying to get me hooked up today. You know, technology, and I'm not friends with it, and I don't really care to be. I'm old school. You know, just give me pen and paper, and But that can lead us back to the painted canvas, because I think you said this, Gary, you don't have any interest in the painted canvas because you like the counted.
Right.
Because you don't. Is there less creativity than in following what's already on painted on the canvas for you? Oh, no, so what's the difference?
Painted canvas does not appeal to me. Somebody said it, and I gave one to Beth, and I have a couple more here that I keep threatening to work on. It's not that I don't dislike it at all. I admire it, but I struggle with so many of them. Because to me, and somebody said this once, that she said to me, said in a, it was a group setting, I don't get painted canvas because when I look at that, the art is already done. And okay, there's an element to that. But then mm-hmm. when you see people who do painted canvas well, really mm-hmm. do it well, they take that flat dead canvas and they put it on a new level. Mm-hmm. There's so much dimension and so much life to it. And I really admire the ability to do that, to visualize that, to see, look, if I do this thread in this way, it comes out. And if I do this, it goes back. Mm-hmm. And if I do this, it expresses this aspect of it. Well, and Beth, you, with your lizard canvas, I mean, look at all the life you put into what was just kind of a, okay canvas.
Right.
But when you finished it, I mean, there's something there. That thing is living. And so mm-hmm. I admire that part. I just don't have interest in doing it.
And that's what I, and again, I, same with rug hooking. I didn't think I'd have any interest in that, but it was when I was watching Beth do her lizard that I thought it was that same aspect of this would be a great thing to be able to do and not have to be trying to look at a chart and count, mm-hmm. you know, it would be a little bit more relaxing. So I looked for it and I couldn't find it. I don't know where I put it at, but it was some painting. I think I got it on Etsy. It was a painting that's already exists that someone made into, and it's like a girl with a little red hat on or something, you know, like a profile. And I just thought, simple. I love it. And I bought the kit and I started it. And then I don't know if I'm being too hard on myself, but there's some places where you're like, okay, is that red or is that little part mm-hmm. supposed to be on the red hat or is that the background, you know, where some of that crosses over.
Yeah.
And then I got frustrated and just put it away.
Right. Yeah.
So right.
Yep. Yeah. Some know. Of those you have to make decisions on. I think it's, I made that mistake with I did a painted canvas. It was a dimensions kit. And I made the mistake of following the painting on it instead of saying, okay, this is a sphere. I need to make this perfectly round because it was just printed. So it wasn't printed very well.
Yeah.
My daughter doesn't care. She likes her stocking. So.
Okay, good.
It's fine.
So when you had that out the other night again, Beth, I thought, oh, I want to find that. And I'm going to try that again. I'm going to try that painted canvas again. I think part of it too is I really didn't have the right frame to put it on. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to get the stretcher bars and use tacks or something.
Yes. That's so, almost essential. Okay. Yeah.
Well, add that back to my list.
Yeah. See, painted canvas, because it's an interesting aspect of, and I know it's a huge aspect of needlework. But it's interesting in that I think it is a huge turnoff for a lot of people because of the upfront expense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know, that is gigantic, and you can't ignore it. And so a lot of people go, I can't do that because of that. But then, you know, and then they'll argue, painted canvas people argue, well, but it's so much more creative than counted. Well, I disagree with that vehemently. Mm-hmm. But there is a huge element of creativity there. But then for so many, the first question after they buy the canvases, is there a stitch guide?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's now you're back to counting canvas again. You're not, there's no creativity. And there's that small percentage of painted canvas people, and I think it's a rather small percentage, who can pick up a canvas and see it and put it, you know, put life into it.
Mm-hmm.
And can do it time after time after time, and that's to me there's a real talent there, but
and that's Beth.
Well,
and I think it's practice. I think you get to a point. I mean, I did a lot of ripping on the lizard, and I did a lot of going back and forth. I think that's what people don't like to do. They don't.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I'm going to waste my threads. I'm going to waste my time. Well, that was part of the learning process. That's part of mm-hmm. doing the project. If I wanted a canvas stitched a certain way, I would buy the stitch guide and just be like doing a counted piece, like Gary said. And mm-hmm. I don't mind that. I do have some that are that way. But I really, really like the challenge of thinking, well, what stitch am I going to put here? How am I going to make it look the way I want it to look?
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. That's hard to do. It's not, it doesn't, and because it's not something I've done a lot of. I think you get better at it if you do more,
mm-hmm.
like anything.
Agreed.
But, if you don't try.
Look how many show segments over how long we talked about that lizard canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tip of the iceberg to all the effort you put in. I think it would be fun to see the pile of threads that you hauled out of your inventory or bought,
right,
as consideration for this thing that got rejected, maybe used, who knows what. But there's got to be a pretty healthy pile of thread that played a role in some way, either positive or negative, in putting that together. I mean, mm-hmm. that did not come about easily. It was over a good course of time that you thought about it and worked on it, tore it out, started over, all kinds of things. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But Gary, can I go back and ask you, why did you say, because it, I mean, everything is expensive when you're first starting it, but if I already have yarn in my stash or am willing to go to Goodwill, if I'm not just buying, if I'm buying a kit that's already done, but if I buy something and I can just use my own colors or use my stash, I mean, why, I just feel like, is that really, I mean, if you already have the things, do you know what I'm saying?
A hand painted canvas is a big initial capital outlay that you can't ignore.
To just buy the canvas, you mean?
As Beth was describing, you can buy printed ones that are cheap.
But, and that's what I did. That's why I'm wondering, are they really expensive?
Most of them will drive you to drink.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. Okay. I remember I was looking at a Christmas stocking at one point in time. I mean, I still love it. I still haunt it, although I do not need another Christmas stocking. But it runs just the stocking, no threads, nothing else. I think it runs about $300.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So let me get this straight. So you've clearly
never purchased a print a hand painted canvas.
No, so that's why I'm saying.
Boy.
If I
oh boy,
no, listen,
be careful.
listen. Okay, this is what I need to know in case I do want to really try it. Okay, I need to save more. I need to work more Fridays. Is what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay. So you're saying there's going to be a difference between like the one I bought on Etsy that wasn't that expensive. I mean, it was affordable as a kit, where maybe it was just printed on rather than, you saying these expensive ones are hand painted on?
They're hand painted. They're called thread painted. So each little intersection, you know what color you're supposed to put down. There's no questions. Or if there is, it's more of a shading question than anything else. But even that, if it's well done canvas, you can just buy threads and go.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a reason they're expensive. Some people say, well, why would you stitch on top of that? It's beautiful as it is.
Right.
And it is.
No,
they are.
I could see doing that. But then Beth, if we back way up to when I was talking about the girl with the red hat that I bought, what you really wanted to say was, Kelly, that's because you bought a cheap printed canvas.
No, there's a reason. I mean, they're a great starting spot. I mean, like I said, I had a dimensions kit but you need to look at it and decide. You need to make those thoughtful decisions when you're stitching and saying, well, the red really doesn't go there. They must have misprinted that. Or why would they put red there? Is there a reason? Is that where there should be red there because it makes this look right? I don't know. You'd have to look at the canvas and decide.
Okay, but for me, because I started with something that was less expensive and smaller, but then I got frustrated because I couldn't figure out the printing on it. For me, maybe I would be better off even starting out spending a little bit more money on a painted one where I could really tell what I'm mm-hmm. supposed to do.
You would.
Right? Yeah. Would. Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, and this is, I'm to some people going to come across as trashing painted canvas. Not at all. I have great admiration. I personally, just me personally, I have great admiration for what talented people can do with painted canvas because it's absolutely stunning. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some, in the bigger picture, there are some drawbacks to it as, this is the only needlepoint. And counting canvas gets kind of shoved to the back, in my opinion, when it shouldn't be, because there's a ton of beautiful counting canvas designs, a ton of them. Mm-hmm. That Lorene Salt one that Cindy and Robin took at the A&G thing. Oh, that is absolutely mind-blowing, just mind-blowing. The Dawn to Dusk that you're working on, Beth.
Right.
That is, that's counted canvas, but that is just layer on layer, mind-blowing stuff. Anything mm-hmm. Gay Ann Rogers does.
Right.
you know, all of that. They're not painted canvas, but they are stunning pieces of needlework when they're done and executed well. Painted canvas just has, I think, has that initial turnoff for so many people because they have the same reaction you had to the cost of a painted canvas. Like that yeah. bird one we were talking about the other night. I'm sure if you went to buy that thing, you'd probably pay $400.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
For the canvas.
No doubt. No doubt. And it's worth it because they're hand painted. Somebody takes paint to, and that takes time. And having painted my own canvases, just doing a color swatch on them, it's easy to make a mistake and make a mess. So, but there's joy in the journey. There's joy in the journey of it.
And, you know, Gary, I hope I'm not sounding negative or dissing or anything, even going back to the machine quilters, because there's something for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's all beautiful and it's what makes you happy working on. I'm just mm-hmm. referring to what things work for me.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I have a friend that machine quilts and she does beautiful work. And I know how much time she practices to machine quilt her quilts. And it's gorgeous. And I know what she does to get her work perfect.
Well, and
I would tear my hair out if I had to do that.
Yeah, no, I know. And then if you talked, well, I just did a tour with my friend Denise, who's in my quilt guild, who all her quilts, and they weren't really my style, but for what she does, they were absolutely beautiful. Hers are all machine quilted. And when I talk about what I do, she doesn't get it. Like she would not hand stitch anything, you know? So there's that side of it too. And so there's something for everybody, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Whatever floats your boat. Well,
but see, and that's why we do Fiber Talk is because there are so many different techniques and approaches. And that's the purpose of this, is to share those with people, to broaden people's horizons so that they mm-hmm. can see. Now, you know, that doesn't mean we like them all. We don't have to like them all. There's no requirement that we have to, though, unfortunately, we we dig into too many of them. But but that's the whole purpose, is to share these various techniques, of various needle art techniques and the artists behind them and what goes into that so that, you know, because who knows? Somebody might listen to a podcast and go, wow, I never knew that existed. I'd like to give that a try.
Right.
You know,
or like me that in my lifetime said, I will never want to do a painted canvas. And then now that I've been watching you guys, I'm thinking, well, I think I want to try that.
Right.
But now, so now I'm trying to pick your brain to find out. So now I know, you know, I went out and tried it without really knowing what I was doing. I bought something that I didn't know. So now that I know more, I'll investigate a little bit more.
Start
and try to figure.
I would start with a Debbie Woodard Angel.
Okay. I have to write that
painted,
down.
Painted Debbie pony, Woodard. Painted Pony Designs.
Painted Pony. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She has
is that
5,000 angels that are painted canvases.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can find most of the shops will kit them for you if you ask, and that's probably the best way to go because needlepoint uses different threads than cross stitch. There's some crossover, but they use a thicker thread.
Is it thread or is it more like a yarn?
It's threads.
You can use wool yarn, but you're better off using threads. And I have that kit's downstairs, so I can't bring it, show you.
See,
but
the kit I bought had yarn in it.
Yeah, that's kind of older school. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What do you, Gary? What do you guys always say? You're enabling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey, you said you'd record the show. That's the risk you take, you know?
Oh, man.
Well,
I thought we were talking about the stuff I make, not what well, you guys
we were going to, but you want to
teach
it up,
me to so. Make. Yeah,
you, you never know where we're going to go on this show, right? Yeah. You know.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh!
At least we haven't started you on gold work. See, if we start you on that, then you know you're in trouble because that's bad. Bad.
Beth, no, yeah, no. I've. Your work is beautiful, Beth. But if I, I don't even. Don't.
Yeah, that's
Beth,
what I
don't
said.
Even,
that's
don't
what
even
I
look
said.
At me like that.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I said. And then look.
I know.
It's, you know, it's this Gary's fault.
Yeah. And if we were having this conversation 18 months ago, Beth would say, "Nope, not interested.
No.
Nope,
not doing gold work.
Never gonna do it."
I know. What is it? Is it what? What happens? It's almost like you're, you know, hypnotized or something. You know, go do gold work.
Yeah. Well, I jumped in deep, and it's bad.
Yep.
Beth, I'm gonna watch you do gold work. I am. I'm telling you right now. I'm gonna say it. I am not gonna do gold work.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Although I love to do beading. I used to do a lot of beading. So right. We'll
mark,
see.
Beating's fun. Mark this date down, Beth.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Got it down. Yeah. It's on my notes.
Because I wish I had written down the date where Beth said, nope, no, never.
Oh, God.
Never.
Okay. Hey, do you want to talk about something else?
I want to talk about yo-yos. I want to know what these yo-yo things are.
Okay. But I do want to tell Beth your modern folk embroidery. When you started that in February, I thought, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it with Beth because I really love the clock idea and how you're going to put the hands in it, right? And make a clock.
So engineers for.
Yeah, then when you showed it on Wednesday night, I thought I knew I should have started that with Beth because now you're almost done and it is gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
I am done.
You
finished it.
Oh, you finished it.
I don't have it here, but yes, I'll put. We'll post photos.
Okay.
But.
So. Yeah. Okay. Good.
You're
all
behind,
right. All right.
Kelly.
I'll talk about yo-yos. What do you want to talk about?
What is this whole yo-yo thing? Is this a quilting thing or another thing?
Well, Beth, you know yo-yos, right?
I do know yo-yos.
Okay, so you know what a yo-yo is, don't you, Gary?
Duncan yo-yo, you know what it looks like? Cats in the cradle and in and out. Yeah, I know all that, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, fabric yo-yos. You know, I've tried to... did you see I'm just ignoring you? I'm totally ignoring you.
And I want you to know I'm used to it, so it doesn't bother me. So go on.
Okay.
Tell me about yo-yos.
So yo-yos, I know, I see one right in front of me, and I know there's some people that are on video, so you don't want me to grab it, do you?
You can hold it up, but we'll just describe it. It's fine.
Okay. A yo-yo is a round, circular piece of fabric that's cinched together like a shower cap. And then you pull the threads together and you can make it, you can sew them on anything. You can make them into a pillow, a quilt, anything. So yo-yos were, the very first thing that my grandma taught me how to sew because back in the day, you know, you just traced like a mug, you know, like a mug and had it a certain size. And then you flip over the front edge to the inside, and then you just do a little like quarter inch seam allowance and then gather it together. And then it's like a little shower cap and you just kind of work it until it's as flat as you can get it. And then, most of them, well, you guys know what yo-yo quilts are. They're hand stitched together to make grids. And, you know, depending on the fabric that you use, you can do different designs with them. So, Gary, you're taking me back to the yo-yo quilt that my grandma made that my sister has. So anyway,
yeah, I know, and you're still mad because you had to give it away. Yeah,
I'm still mad.
Yeah.
So
they an embellishment or an element for making a quilt or both?
Well, they are both. Isn't that what's so fantastic about them? So Gary, not to promote my lecture on yo-yos, but I have so many different really cool things. I have a cardigan jacket that's made out of silk yo-yos, a table topper, table runners. Now my big thing is they call them yo-yo quilts, but it's not technically a quilt because it's not layered and quilted together. So I'm working on something where I'm sewing quilts as an yo-yos as an embellishment onto the top of a quilt.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's hard to explain without being able to show or look at stuff.
Show it, and we'll talk about it.
Okay, hang on. Okay, I'm going to reach just for a second. Hang on just a second.
Okay.
I'm getting what I need. I'm getting what I need.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a yo-yo right there.
Okay. So it literally does look like a shower cap. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it does. And that's the back of it. That is the front. But
okay. So what we see is where in a shower cap, the elastic with it all folded up, but on the backside, it's flat.
Right. Okay. Right. So these are old yo-yos that I got off eBay. And do you see how they are stitched? They're just hand stitched together.
Okay.
To make, you know, a square or whatever.
So effectively circular granny squares that are connected together to make a quilt.
Yes. Or like this one that I'm holding up, if you can see that. That yeah. one, this is actually full of sawdust. This is really heavy. I use this as a kind of a weight to put on my quilts when I'm trying to smooth them out and mm-hmm. get them sandwiched together. Here is the one that I was just telling you about. These are all stitched together. This doesn't fit me, otherwise I put it on, but here's the arm of the, this is a beautiful cardigan, and you can see these are very small. So, Clover company has.
So in this instance, you're taking a whole truckload of small yo-yos, sewing them together, and then making that into a sweater, piece of clothing.
Right.
Yeah.
So talk about slow stitching or mindless work. That's probably the very first thing that would have been called slow stitching, because you just sit there and mindlessly make these little yo-yos. I would make them and just throw them in a big jar until I, you know, got enough to make whatever I wanted. But that takes forever. So then I just started taking them and putting them on. Oh, here. I happen to have Sam's quilt here. So these are yo-yos that I have on Sam's quilt as flowers. I'm trying to find an embroidered part. But then I'm embroidering around it.
Yeah.
And I'll add beads. So see, that's just all these put together that are making, like, coming out of a flower pot.
Okay, I get it now. So they add a huge amount of dimension to your piece then.
They do. They do. Yeah. I mean, you could use them. You could use those on a cross stitch piece. You could put them on a hook drug. You could put them on clothes. I've glued them on like bags and purses. You can use them on anything. Yo-yos is the one thing I'm kind of passionate about, just because they're so fun and you can do so many different things with them.
Yeah. Well, I can see you can just sit in a chair and just make them all night long. And
And different sizes. Yeah. So Clover came out with yo-yo templates years ago now. And I thought, even then I was like, oh, I'm never going to use those. You know, I want to be a purist and do it the way my gram taught me. You know, just trace different circles of different sizes. Well, then when I started using them, I was hooked. So they have really big, I don't know, like 60 millimeter, 45 millimeter, 20. I mean, small.
Okay.
So the Clover template, yeah. What else do you want to know about yo-yos?
That's it. That's good.
They're fabric. They're fabric yo-yos, not.
I get it. I'm a relatively quick study, so I get it. Yeah.
Not the kind we played with as a kid.
I can tell you I'll never make one, but I get it. Yeah.
That's so funny. I was just going to ask you, Beth, have you made a yo-yo?
I have never made a yo-yo, and I've never done English paper piecing, and that's something. But yo-yos and English paper piecing are similar in that you use a little template to make something small, and then you stitch them together after you've made all your little components.
Yeah. You know what, Gary, I have, do you want to see my, what, So for me, my stitching year, I kind of starts in September. I kind of renew and decide what I want to stitch or if there's something new I want to try, like the painted canvas. So I don't use January because I do a lot of gardening and I love to be outside. So September is when I kind of hunker down and think, well, what do I want to work on this winter? Or what do I want to try?
So back up. So, yeah. So during the summer months, you do very little needlework?
Very little, because by the time I get home from work, if it's still light out, Jim has to have some kind of attention. It can't just be work and stitching. So,
husband,
there's a fight. Yeah.
Men are such a pain in the keister, aren't they?
I know. And I've talked about this other places several times. So don't even, yeah, this is the worst part. I've tried several different ways to sit and stitch with Jim at night so we can be together. You know, I've tried the magnifier and the lighter on my neck. I've tried the one that comes here, the one that goes there, the book clip. And he always complains that the light is bouncing off the TV and there's a glare. So I just learned, just give it up. I don't stitch when I'm sitting with Jim. So during the winter, when it's dark and there's nothing else going on, I'll just get a lot more stitching done, especially on the week. And see, the thing is, I stitch a lot on the weekends. So during the nice months, I have to be outside. I like to work out in the yard and do that. And so, yeah. So September kind of starts my stitching. Like, okay, I'm going to start, you know, just sitting and stitching. So Beth brought up English paper piecing. So do you want to see this big project I'm going to work on, Beth?
Yes, I do.
You too, Gary. I'm talking to you too, Gary. Okay.
Okay. Again, used to being ignored. Doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think this could be inspiration for anybody. Do you guys like to go through books, even like old sampler books or whatever? I'm trying to relate it to cross stitch since I know a lot of people, but I love to look for inspiration in old books. So this old quilt book.
Catherine Jean Comfort. Adams. What's it called? Comfort and Glory.
It's Comfort and Glory. So, I got this at the library and then they said I didn't return it, but I know I did. So I think I was charged like $50 because they said I didn't return it, but I didn't have it. So then I found it on some used book place and I had to buy it, but I got it for less than $50. So the library is expensive if you don't return a book. I'll just tell you that right now.
Did you pay the fee?
I did. Okay. Of course I did. Okay. So this book, so.
Just checking to see if you're legal or not, you know.
I am legal. I'm a nice, good girl. Haven't you heard? Okay. Look at this. This is all English paper pieced. Can you see that?
Yeah. So like it's a grandma's garden. On diamond shape, on point.
Oh, are you guys still there?
We're still here.
We're here.
Okay, I'm trying to look. This was made in 1860. 1860. So usually I don't do this, but I went through and I'm trying just out of my stash to match the fabrics that are in the original quilt. So I've got all these done. So see, these are all done on 1-inch hexies. That's the back, what the back looks like. Have you tried English paper piecing, Beth, did you say?
I have not. I do have friends that are good at it. So I have sources, but I do not need another hobby. I do not need another hobby. I have fabric too. So I could even, we're not going to go there.
Oh yeah. Let's go there. So this is what I want to work on and try to recreate that quilt. But talk about that, Beth. Do you know, Gary, you can, this girl showed on, you can strip your old fabric and use that for rug hooking.
Oh.
You can use fabric. Yeah. Isn't that a cool idea too?
That is. That is.
A way to use your stash. Yeah. I want to try that.
Yeah, and I have plenty of fabric, which is weird because I don't quilt, you know, but.
See, I thought you did. Don't you do wool? You do wool applique, though.
A little bit.
Gary, where? Gary?
Yeah?
I don't like being full screen by myself.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
No.
Okay, well. she thought we left her. No. I don't really quilt. I've made a few quilts, but I don't really quilt.
Okay.
But I love quilts. I love fabric. So that's why I have fabric stash. Because you never know. You might need it.
You might need it.
Beth is the epitome of you never know. She's ready for whatever. Yeah. Bring it on.
Bring it on.
Hi, Beth. Beth,
yes.
You might be close enough to me. Gary's too far away. I have to figure out Zoom. But you should let me come. Listen, you should let me come. Yeah. And see your stitching room. Yeah. Come on, Beth.
I don't have Gary would love that. No.
Beth,
I just want a tour of the basement. That's all I want.
I'm teasing you because I know you won't show it. But I thought maybe if I pressured you into it.
No. She won't. No. She no. Won't.
People are going to comment. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see Beth's.
I want to see a tour of the basement. I don't care about the stitching room upstairs. It's the basement I want to see.
You want to see all the stash?
That's where the treasures are at. That's where the treasures are at. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Treasures mm-hmm. Beth long ago forgot she even had. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, yeah, Beth. We won't discuss that. Yes.
Beth, I'll show you my basement if you show me yours.
No.
Won't work.
It won't work.
Hey, what cross stitching do you do, Kelly? Do you use samplers or what do you do?
Yeah, I really, really like samplers. I'm going to take you with me. I really like samplers. I started cross stitching when I was pregnant with Paige, my daughter, who's 41. Here's one that I did that I haven't framed yet. You know, the needle worker. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really tried anything smaller than 36 count. And I really do like samplers, but that's the thing, Gary, when do I have time to do this? I'm working on a Bristol sampler that I keep at work. Come back. That I keep at work. It's, a Dutch treat design.
Mm-hmm.
It's a MA something. I just had it.
Well, Dutch treat anyway, is Claudia Kistler, but I don't know what.
Yeah.
Is it the one with the squirrel on it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah.
I keep that one at work.
Who doesn't have that chart?
Who stitched
you have it?
That's the question.
Have you stitched it? No, I've not. No. But I have used parts of it all over the place.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Well, if you can imagine this, I'm doing mine. I know I talk about Cece from the Thread Gatherer all the time. I don't know if her silks really aren't talked about that much in the cross stitch world. But I'm doing it all in her in the reds. It's a variegated
thread.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So I'm doing that in all her thread, and I stitch on that on my lunch. So I'm kind of curious to see how long it takes me to finish that one. I started it last year, but that's the one that I'm really focused on. That when I do on my lunches cross stitch, I should now I join Planet Fitness so that I could go walk on my lunch. But when you decide, should I go to Planet Fitness or should I sit and cross stitch?
I know. It's a tough decision. I would cross stitch. I know that.
It's very tough. It's very tough. Yeah. So, but yeah, I really like samplers. I love Needlework Press and Gott, I think is my very favorite. I do have that when I started it. I know it's a sickness. It's terrible.
Yeah.
No. It is. And then every time
it's
you guys
a sickness,
show something.
But I wouldn't say it's terrible.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, okay, here's the terrible, this is the terrible part. I don't have time to work, to do it.
Yeah.
I gotta. And, you know, I hate to say that because you'd think that, you know, my kids are grown. I don't have, you know, my grandkids live across the country. What do I do? Why don't I have time? It takes me like about 50 minutes to drive to work. So much of my time is either in a car or working. Isn't that depressing? Yeah.
That's I think it's a season. I think it's a season. There's just seasons in your life that you get less done. I think that, I don't know if someone had just said they just retired but then somebody, all of a sudden they were volunteering for all the other things. And so their time got squeezed.
We talked about making things for gifts and stuff a little while ago. I think that's part of it too, is I used to feel guilty if I took the time to sit and be by myself and stitch and do what I wanted to do. And I think that's why I made things for gifts, because then I could justify just sitting and stitching, you know, and it took me a while to figure out that that isn't being selfish. You know, I need to do it for my own, my own soul, my own peace of mind. I'm going to be 64 years old. It took me, 60 years to figure that out almost,
That's interesting. That's guilt driven stitching. No way.
But I had that for all those years. Isn't that sad? So now I am. And I think it was Sam's passing and looking at my creativity and what I want to do in a different way. And that's when I decided I'm doing this for me, and doing certain things to honor him. But it took, isn't that sad that it took a tragedy for me to get to that point where I felt okay about doing that for myself?
Different folks. Can you talk about that? Can we talk about that stitching and the loss of your son? Say no if you don't want to, but how did stitching help you through that? Did it give you the release or was not part of it?
Well, and part of it was, my daughter, Paige and Sam were 12 years apart. Same husband at the time. So they were as much as alike as they were so different. Paige is very, very talented. She's was a professional photographer. She's busy raising her kids now, but still does that. So she had her own creativity, but she did not want to stitch or sew or do anything like that. Not at all. Sam was the one that was like interested in my stitching, wanted to learn how to sew. He was the one that connected with me on that. So I think, if he wouldn't have been and been so supportive of me and interested in what I was doing, I don't know if I would have felt the same way about it. But I knew he would want me to continue stitching and doing and making things. And this was a heartbreaking moment. Kids text these days. They don't voicemail leave voicemails. And after he passed, I thought, oh my God. I mean, I was like anxiety panicked. I thought, I do not have his voice anywhere. I don't have anything that is going to have his voice on it. And I just wanted to hear his voice because he never left me a message and I found this video that I did. It was when he was working on this Bring More Flowers that he was doing. He was hacking a jean jacket and he wanted me to teach him how to sew, how to make yo-yos, how to embroider and how to use my machine. So we were working on it that day and I got him stitching on my sewing machine and I just did it so I could send to his sister and his dad and, to show him what he was doing. And in that video, he turns around. He turns around and he's working on something and just nonchalantly, he says, I don't know why this isn't working out, Mom. And when I found that video, and not only did I have just a little snippet of him, but him stitching and then him saying, Mom, that little snippet video was like gold to me. And when I found that, it, it just, it kind of kept me going. It reminded me that, you know, I don't know, it's just all encompassing of, you know, I've got to do this. So a lot of that time, it wasn't even, a lot of, honestly, a lot of that time I couldn't, right after I couldn't stitch or sew. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I just sat like a zombie. It was like I had concrete poured over the top of me. But it was in my mind, I was picturing what I wanted to make and what I wanted to sew and what I would work on. I knew I didn't give it up, but it was still, so even if we're not actually doing the physical sewing, isn't that amazing how it's so, so important
at that,
about.
At that worst possible time in your life, it was there for you.
It was, even in my mind, if I couldn't physically stitch, all I thought about was what I wanted to make, what did I, how did I want to commemorate him? I started a cross stitch sampler for him and I just couldn't finish it. Same as I can't finish the quilt. And I think it's because once it's finished, it will be like, okay, that's done. It's true. He's gone. So I think there's something in me that doesn't want to finish those yet, but everything I do now has, I've been able to focus on, his whole thing was bring more flowers. So almost everything I do has flowers. I was going to talk about this too. He was enrolled in school and was going to study mycology, which is, like mushrooms and, you know, fungus and things like that. And, so flowers and mushrooms show up for me in the weirdest ways. So I'm thinking that's Sam. He's with me. And, so anyway, the other night too, when Jamie was on, see, that is not anything that I ever thought I would be interested in would be stitching one of those chatelaine, designs.
Yeah.
But oh my gosh, it was so, and I think that, isn't that the beauty of it though, is it is that you don't think you'd ever want to do that. But then when you see it, when I saw that, so I started scrolling and looking at all those chatelaine designs. She has the most beautiful one it's like mushrooms and something. Uh-huh. And I ordered it to make, to commemorate Sam. So that's kind of what it's almost like everything I do now, I have him in the back of my mind of what I'm making or stitching. And I can hear him saying, you know, Mom, that's cool. Or, yeah, Mom, I like that. Or, you know, yeah, Mom, just keep going.
Yeah.
So, Yeah. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel, it takes that grief and puts it someplace. And it takes it, not only does it put it someplace, but if you just keep doing it and not give up, it turns that into some kind of joy. And then when you're making something, then you have some beauty to look at.
Right.
You know, so it's just all a combination for me. It's important. It's important.
Yeah. So, beauty out of ashes.
Yeah. 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 Like, and I don't care if Cece minds if I bring her up, but, and so many creative people that I know who have had tragedies as well, use their creativity and their stitching in kind of the same way. Now, Cece, do you remember when you did that show with Orna Willis, Gary?
Yeah.
Engage.
Orna Willis? Yeah. Engage. Yeah. So that, and Cece's son Gage, well, he actually committed suicide. And she did a whole line of threads that she dyed for Gage that were all in like palettes that were his colors, you know, that they would have liked. So, which, you know, every time I use those colors, I know that it makes me think of Gage. Yeah. And even though I'm friends with Cece, I never met Gage, but all those things, just those connections, it's a way up to kind of carry them on in a piece of, you know, even to carry on to your family. Like, you know, I hope my grandkids one day, if, you know, they'll see Sam's quilt, know that I made it for him and that it will make them think of him, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. We're going to end on that note because we went way over. So, yes.
Yeah, we did. But boy, was it fun.
Yes.
It was. All right. Thanks, Kelly. And thanks to everyone for listening.
All right. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks.